We also heard from the Prime Minister yesterday that he's watched that TV, the Netflix series Adolescence. What have you learnt from that, Mrs. Badenoch?
I haven't watched it. I don't have time to watch anything these days, to be honest, but I have read about
it. The Prime
it.
Minister's and had I think time it's... to watch it, Mrs. Badenoch.
Yes, well they have. And so what I understand is that this is a fictional representation of a story that is actually quite different. I'm not going to watch every single thing that everybody's watching on Netflix. I do know what they're watching and I know what it's about. And I've given a view that it is a work of fiction that is interesting, that touches on a problem in society, but there are bigger problems such as Islamic terrorism and that kind of radicalization. And the story which it is based on has been fundamentally changed. And so creating policy on a work of fiction rather than on reality is the real issue.
Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. Now, only twice in my life have I witnessed the British people descend into something like hysteria. The first time was the death of Princess Diana in August 1997. The country went mad. That was also part of a broader madness relating to electing New Labour and dramatically everybody becoming all emotional and left-wing and lacking the ability to think. And the second time was obviously the COOF and the BLM, with the two things, of course, being related. But I wonder if I'm now witnessing the third time as a kind of delayed reaction to what happened in Southport, to the Axel Rudacabana massacre, in the form of the reaction to this anti-white, anti-British propaganda known as adolescence. Are we now witnessing another hysteria? And I think we are. And in this video, I am going to look psychologically at exactly what is happening. Why are we witnessing this hysterical reaction to the extent that someone essentially tweeted something like, "If you that Kemi Badenoch was letting the country down by not watching this propaganda," and someone tweeted that you don't give a fuck about this country if you don't watch it, and they want to make it free to watch in schools. So that's what I will look at, the psychology of this hysteria. But before I do so, could you do me a favour? And could you please, please, please subscribe? I know it's annoying to be asked, but please, only about half of you subscribe. So could you please subscribe? Could you subscribe here on YouTube? And could you subscribe on my Substack? That's jollyheretic.com, where I put all of the most basic stuff I can't put on YouTube, where I put full videos, where I put in-person interviews, where I put my vlog, where I put films I make, where I put my writings, and where if you like what I do, you can support me for the cost of just a pint of beer a month. Okay, back to the video. So basically, psychologically, what is happening is this. What happened in Southport and the resultant riots are an indicator to us, consciously as well as unconsciously, that chaos is coming. That the breakdown of society is coming. That the collapse of the current order is coming. Even, I suspect, that the collapse of left-wing hegemony is coming. And for a lot of people, particularly those who are invested psychologically for their sense of self and sense of self-esteem and sense of self-worth and sense that they're important and moral and matter in left-wing hegemony, but in general, just people that like a quiet life, this is frightening. It's coming from three angles. It's coming from, I suppose you would say, ethnic minorities or blacks, and in particular, the knife crime they engage in and the chaos of the inner cities. It's coming from Islam, Islamic fundamentalism, Islamism, and violent jihad against the native population. And it is coming, I suspect, to some extent, from young white men, because young white men, we know from the data, are reacting, of course they are rebelling against the system in which they have been raised. And they have been raised in a left-wing feminist system that tells them that men are bad, that men are toxic, that men are no good, That it's no good to be English, it's no good to be British, that you should be cowed, that you should be guilty, that you should be ashamed of all these things. And therefore, increasingly, we know that women are coming apart from men. Women being very high in social conformism, uber social conform, they are very left wing. Men are much more likely to rebel. And therefore, those men are very right wing, and they're doing so in a context in which it is increasingly difficult for them to get housing and therefore and to get money and therefore to attract mates. And they're doing so in a context in general of de facto female polygamy, in which it's very difficult for them to get women. And so this attracts them to radicalization. It's coming. A shift is coming. The data simply on who's breeding among the more intelligent, as I've looked at in my book, The Past is a Future Country and in Woke Eugenics, tells us that the shift is coming. And what happened with Ruda Cabana was a sign of what is coming, a symbol of what is coming. Violence indirectly related to Islam by a black person with a knife and a strong white male reaction against this. Now, why is it then this concept of toxic masculinity, why is it that that has become promoted so strongly? Well, I suspect it's because of the increasing influence of women over society. And the kind of women who are going to influence society, who are going to want power, who are going to move into positions of power, are likely to be women that have masculine qualities, basically, such as a desire for power, such as a desire for authority, and so on. And what kind of women are these? Well, as I've looked at in my book, Witches, Feminism, the Fall of the West, women of a feminist nature tend to... the studies indicate that about 65 or 70% of women have rape fantasies. And this is higher among women with a feminist identification. Rape fantasy correlates weakly with feminist identification. Why? Well, because what kind of system masculinizes women? It's a system which is highly unstable and dangerous. In that context, you live for the now, you don't invest in your offspring, you pass on your genes as quickly as possible, you pump and dump. And so therefore, the women have to have a certain masculine qualities in order to survive. So there's not much difference psychologically in that context between men and women. And so in that sense, women are more feminist. In that context, the only way your offspring will survive in that dangerous yet unstable ecology is if they are tough and violent and aggressive. And so therefore, you have to be attracted to men who are tough and violent and aggressive, who are dominant. How do you know they are dominant in that context? Well, the answer is that they can dominate you. And so you have this paradox whereby such women will be attracted to men who can dominate them, who are violent and aggressive, and they must fight them off, and they can only know that they are the right man when they are dominated by them. So ironically, as Andrea Dworkin, the feminist, argued, sex is rape. Men are both repellent and attractive. Men are toxic. Men are evil. Men want to hold you down and do violence to you, which you don't like. But ultimately, you kind of do like it. A, because it narcissistically tells you that they can't keep their hands off you. And B, because the fact that they can dominate you and you can't fight them off ironically tells you that they are the man whose offspring will survive in the difficult ecology. But nevertheless, that's the nature of sex for feminists. And that's the nature of men. They're toxic. And so everything must be thrown at them, just as in the process of fertilisation, everything is thrown at the sperm, vaginal mucus, white blood cells, to kill them, to destroy them, such that the healthiest, fittest sperm gets through. And at that point, it stops being rape. And that's what part of feminism is about. And you could argue even that is what toxic, this whole system with this film is about, adolescence and the whole schooling system. Let's make boys' lives as difficult and awful and horrible as possible. Let's basically tell boys they should be girls and should behave like girls. Let's throw everything at boys to destroy them and rip them apart. And only the best boys will get through. So That's what you could argue adolescence is about. And in a sense, that's what I've called woke eugenics. This idea that woke eugenics sucks into a death cult, sucks into destruction. Most people put them on a maladaptive roadmap of life, and the best, the healthiest survive. So you could argue, in a sense, weirdly, that feminism is a kind of selection event for good quality men. But more importantly, returning to the hysteria, they know that this is coming and they can't face it. A lot of people, this is why presenting what has been presented with this propaganda, this lie, this idea that, oh, you've got a boy who's been influenced online by Andrew Tate type toxic masculinity and therefore he has knifed a girl. This nonsense is reflective of the fact that they can't face what's happening. The three threats to them are Islam, inner city violence, knife violence and so forth, and the radicalization of white boys. But they only want to focus on one of them because they can't face all three, because it destroys the two of them, Islam and inner city violence, destroy their ideology, and they gain their sense of self-esteem and superiority and sense that they're worth something out of that ideology, out of holding to that ideology. So and they can't accept what's actually happening and look at what's actually happening, because that would then confront them with who they are and destroy their sense of moral superiority. And this would be overwhelming, and this would be horrible. It's adaptive, therefore, to hide from it. When feelings are so overwhelming that they destroy you and make you want to just kill yourself, it's adaptive for most people to hide from it, to be part of the group, to tell themselves satisfying lies. So what do they do in order to, on the one hand, prepare for the, like watching horror movies and zombie movies, to prepare for future chaos, and on the other hand, insulate themselves psychologically from from things which would question things which their sense of self and their sense of moral superiority? Well, you scapegoat white men. You get all of the things that you are worried about, that you're worried about that are coming, that is to say, Islamism, knife crime, inner city knife crime, general chaos, and the radicalization of white men, and you project them all onto white men. You focus it all on white men. And so therefore, there is a degree to which psychologically you are looking at something, a problem, i.e. the collapse of leftism, that may well be coming, but you are also scapegoating it. You are ignoring other problems. Are you ignoring the real problems? Now, this is psychologically helpful because it also allows you to feel united with other people, like clapping for the NHS. It allows you to feel that you're doing something, that you're contributing something to fight a perceived problem, like clapping for the NHS or wearing a mask. And it allows you to project. It allows you to you project all of the vile. You realize unconsciously that there are problems with your own coalition as a leftist, and your own coalition includes inner city blacks, whatever, and Muslims. But you project all of the bad sides of those things, the violence, whatever, it's within your coalition, onto other people, onto young white men. And this perhaps allows you to kind of think about it on a sort of more distant level, in the same way that when children have been sexually abused, they ask you to show what this doll did to this doll rather than actually state what happened to you. So it works perhaps in that way, in some distant way, but also... It insulates you against having to really think about it. It allows you to hide. There are some people in life that will confront what is going on, and there are some people in life that will hide from it. And confronting what is going on and standing out from the crowd can be adaptive for certain people, but for most people it doesn't work. For most people, they can't cope with that. Most people are sheep. Most people want to be part of the group. Most people want to conform. And that is what this involves doing. So you realize the chaos that's coming, but you can't quite face it, but you want to be able to kind of face some of it, or face it unconsciously, so you project it onto young white men, because it's too painful to your sense of self-esteem and your sense of self to be able to actually look at the issue of black knife crime or the issue of Islamism, to actually look at what happened with regard to Southport. So I see this as a way of dealing with Southport, dealing with what happened and what is going to continue to happen by projecting it onto one element, which, yes, according to the data, is going to happen, which is the shift into the right wing. And hopefully by doing that, you can cause people to associate white young men moving to the right or whatever with stabbings and death and so forth, and thus dissuade people from getting involved. But it seems to me that it's obviously not going to work. As I noted in Woke Eugenics, all it's going to do, if you treat young boys like this, is crush the spirit of most of them, but cause the hardiest to survive. So it's the equivalent of having tuberculosis and taking antibiotics and not finishing the course. Because if you don't finish the course, then the hardiest subsections of the virus survive, and then they are resistant to antibiotics. And it's like that. And so all it's going to do, if you throw, you know, making this film to demoralise white boys was bad enough, but promoting it and showing it in schools is only going to mean that a subsection of them will react even more strongly against it. And eventually you will not be able to hold back the tide. They will become more resentful. They will become angrier. You will make things even worse. And the counter-reaction, when it comes, and I think it's already coming, will be even stronger. And that is why I suspect this, if I want to broadly understand what's going on, this is woke eugenics. Again, this is the idea that you suck everybody into a death cult and only those who are genetically resistant survive. Only those who are genetically resistant to this kind of propaganda survive, and then they will, when they survive, wreak vengeance. So ironically, they are bringing about woke eugenics. That's what I think feminism is about. It's about purging the gene pool of all but the strongest men. That's what I think the wokeness is about. And and this hysteria in relation to adolescence is only going to augment that process and ensure that more slightly weak boys are sucked in through propaganda and indoctrination and being told that basically the way you get women is to behave like a woman, which it isn't, which it absolutely isn't. And so only those that can resist being lied to and resist being indoctrinated get through this process of this hysteria of the promotion of adolescence. But that's why it set off this hysteria. It set off this hysteria because they cannot cope with what has happened. They know what is coming. They fear what is coming. They can't quite deal with what is coming, or they can't bring themselves to discuss what is coming, because part of what is coming proves that the ideology via which they gain self-worth and power is a lie, and they've been lied to, and they're lying. And so the solution is to project all of the negative aspects of their own coalition that's going to come apart and collapse onto young white men, in order to unite them and bolster their coalition and bolster their sense of self-esteem. But it's done in a hysterical context where they know they're wrong, they know there's problems, and the fact that they have to become so emotionally overwrought in relation to those that dare to disagree with them and to dissent, like Kemi Badenoch, only shows that what they are doing is underpinned by genuine fear that their position is under attack, genuine fear that they can't cope in life, genuine fear about all kinds of things. And it's exactly the same with BLM. The reason why they were so aggressive was because you had these mentally unstable people that gained a sense of self-esteem out of adopting BLM. And those that dissented were reminding them by dissenting that they might be wrong and therefore what frauds they were deep down, and this triggered them, and therefore they become angry, they have cognitive dissonance, and they attack those who trigger them to realise that they might not, the thing that they've adopted to cope with low self-esteem might be nonsense, and therefore confronts them with their real selves. And that's what we're dealing with this hysteria here. And I say, good old Kemi Badenoch, she should just turn round and say, no, I don't watch anti-British woke propaganda, and why should I? And the very fact that she was even criticised shows you this is hysteria. But there are good reasons why this hysteria is happening, and it makes me positive about the future that they are so frightened that they need to react in this hysterical way.
Are you ready for the future of the West?